Hello and welcome to BioPharm Reporters podcast. I'm Isabel Cameron, and in this episode, we're joined by Dr. Sarah Baitup, who is the therapy lead at Clerkenwell Health. Clerkenwell Health is a UK-based contract research organisation running clinical trials investigating psychedelic drugs as potential treatments for various mental health conditions. Last year, Clerkenwell became the first company in Europe to open a commercial facility for psychedelic drug trials, located just off Harley Street in London. Clerkenwell is currently working with several companies on a suite of new psychedelics trials for conditions including PTSD, treatment-resistant depression, and anxiety. Sarah, thank you for joining us. First of all, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role at Clerkenwell entails?
Yes, no problem at all. So I'm a cognitive behaviour therapist by training. I've spent my whole career working in mental health. I've founded mental health companies. I've worked as a senior leader and continue to work as a senior leader in mental health services. I'm a researcher. My primary research area is therapist variables, understanding why some therapists are better than others and why. And there is a link from that to psychedelic assisted therapy. And the common theme in my career is I want to make a difference, and I want to make a difference on a bigger and bigger scale. And I am very interested in psychedelic assisted therapy because I hypothesize that it might offer more effective treatments in the future. So in the last 60, 70 years, there have been no major breakthroughs in efficacy in the treatment of common mental health disorders like depression. There's just been nothing. So it's really stagnated. And I became interested in psychedelics about 4 years ago when I was involved in a study with a company called Compass Pathways. And all of a sudden, I thought, actually, psilocybin, for example, offers us the opportunity to treat people who actually might find traditional psychological therapy and traditional mental health drugs pretty ineffective. So that's it in a nutshell.
And could you give us maybe just some insights into the kinds of trials that you've worked on at Clerkenwell and what that process looks like?
Yeah, so it's fairly early days for Clerkenwell Health. Clerkenwell is a startup. Clerkenwell are running two or three trials at the moment. But the process of setting up a randomized control trial to investigate the efficacy of a range of psychedelic compounds is very, very complex. And so there have been lots and lots of discussions, and there are lots of open discussions about trials that have got approval, got Home Office approval, and then, you know, something happens. It's the nature of randomized control trials, isn't it? Something always happens to slow down the process. But the great news is that there, you know, there are trials now starting, and there are participants, and there is early signs of some data. In terms of my role in the trials, my role is all things therapy. Mm-hmm. So psychedelic assisted therapy is exactly as it says on the tin. There's a compound, which is the compound that's under investigation, but there's also the compound and the therapy. And therapy is one of the variables in the trial, and therefore it is really important that we select therapists that can deliver the therapy with fidelity to the model, so there isn't variance, because that makes the data very messy. And my role is also ensuring that we learn about what is it about the therapy that is perhaps one of the change mechanisms. And that's a little bit controversial. So some pharmaceutical industries out there with, you know, wonderful new compounds and products, you know, might not like that. They might not like to hear that the therapy is a change mechanism, because it would make it a lot easier if it was just the compound or the drug that was the change mechanism, and the therapy was, you know, just there for safety. I don't believe that to be the case. I think that this is a marriage. I think it's a marriage between psychological therapy and a psychedelic compound that makes the difference.
So it's important that they work together in harmony.
Completely so. And there are different schools of thoughts here. So some people believe that the drug is a golden bullet, and it will do the job, and the person, the participant, will gain insight and will be able to heal themselves. And the therapist is just there to be a guide and a support and a facilitator, and also to keep the person safe whilst they're under the influence of the drug in the dosing session. That's one school of thought. Another school of thought is that psychedelics actually will make traditional evidence-based interventions like cognitive behavioral therapy or acceptance and commitment therapy, they will make these evidence-based therapies more effective. And I'm in the latter school of thought. So I've worked with some very poorly people in my career, people who, you know, really struggle with therapy because it hurts too much. There's physical pain or emotional pain, or it's terrifying, or they can't tolerate the symptoms. And so they, you know, they really, really struggle. And one of the things that I've seen with psychedelics is that when somebody takes psilocybin, for instance, they experience almost like a decoupling of these very debilitating symptoms, the anxiety symptoms, the heaviness, the tiredness, the emotional pain, the distress. It's almost like you unplug those symptoms. And as a therapist, that's incredibly exciting, because if you can take away those symptoms, the person is much more open to learning new strategies, new techniques, changing behavior, and learning how to live their life to the full, to achieve their goals. And if you're able to do that, that person is likely to get better and they're likely to maintain their goals. And I hypothesize that in some of the studies that we're seeing, well, in all of the studies that we're seeing, so in some of the phase two and phase three data that's published and in the public domain, and what we're seeing is that we're seeing a fast acting antidepressant for really, really poorly people, which is very exciting. But these people don't maintain their gains, the symptoms come back. And I think that's because of the therapy model that's being used, that people are not learning anything in the therapy process, and that's why they don't stay better.
It reminds me actually of, there was a talk at the Psych Symposium, which I know the company was involved in, and it was discussing how psilocybin was being used in early trials for people with quite severe anorexia. And mm-hmm. somebody on the panel described the effects of the psychedelic as almost opening a window of tolerance, yeah. as in it's a way to kind of kickstart that therapy and that yes. healing process for the participants. But on that note, how important is it that when you've opened that window of tolerance, that there's also a really strong aftercare? And how important is it that that therapy continues after patients have had that psychedelic experience?
I think it's really, really important. And I think it also depends on the presenting problem of the participant. Because you know, people have different experiences and different levels of severity of difficulty. So for some people, they might not need enormous amounts of therapy afterwards, but for other people, they do, because it's just the beginning. It's like, I get it. I can feel something different. There is hope for me. And there is this, I call it a window of opportunity. It's like, the blinkers have come off and I can see, you know, that I could work on this. And that's when the therapy is really, really crucially important. You know, it's a little bit like in the media not so long ago, and forgive me because I can't remember the name of the drug, but there was a drug, very effective drug for obesity, which was getting really great results. But unfortunately, when people came off the drug, they just put the weight back on again. And I would argue, and this is only my own opinion, but I would argue that the reason that for that happened is the person hasn't learned anything. They haven't learned about, you know, what makes them eat or overeat, and how to change that behavior and how to maintain that progress. So they haven't had therapy alongside it. They've not learned anything. And therefore, you take the drug away and the symptoms just come back again.
And looking at the day-to-day of your role, what are the responsibilities of a clinical psychedelic specialist therapist? Who are you interacting with and what are your main priorities?
It's quite complicated. So in some ways, I'm helping Clark and Well Health differentiate themselves, and I'm also helping think about training pathways for therapists, competencies, standards, ensuring that psychedelic assisted therapy is destigmatized, and ensuring that we have a curriculum to train therapists, and we know how to assess them, and we know how to monitor fidelity to the model, that we think about ethics. So it's very wide and very varied. It could range from, you know, jumping on an airplane to speak at a conference in Berlin, to writing a set of competencies, or liaising with experts around the world who share our view that we need to learn what works for whom and how to maintain standards, and think about how do we work together to ensure that when these drugs come to market, that the public is safe.
And although it's early days in the field of psychedelics, we've seen it in the news cycle that they're definitely gaining a lot of traction and people are really fascinated by how they work and their potential. What would you say is the current state of psychedelic therapy training in the UK? Are there enough therapists to deliver these treatments? And if not, how do you think we can encourage more people to get involved in the space?
What is the current state of play for psychedelic assisted therapy training in the UK? There isn't much.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of centres that are conducting research trials. So Imperial is obviously one of those. And Clark and Well is another. Compass Pathways is another company that are training therapists across the world, but obviously including the UK. In terms of training, the predominant model of training therapists is something that's called non-directive therapy. And this is basically where the therapist is not delivering any type of therapy. They're developing a therapeutic relationship with the participant. They're inviting the participant to be curious. They're asking questions, but there is no theoretical model. And again, this is my own personal view, but the problem with this non-directive model is that it isn't an evidence-based model. It doesn't exist in any curriculum, in any training of a psychological therapist or a mental health professional. So it's never been tested. It's evolved from Indigenous cultures that have been passed down for centuries from father to son, as part of spiritual and healing ceremonies. Now, that they are, of course, really important, but there isn't a scientific evidence for them. It's very anecdotal. People saying that they're getting better, and people observing people getting better, but we don't know what they're getting better from, and we don't know what better actually means. So the tradition in psychedelic assisted therapy is very much about this non-directive model. And having taught therapists in a previous role about the non-directive model, mental health professionals find it very, very difficult because they don't understand it. And they don't, you know, they've not learnt about it before, and there's no theory behind it. And so the problem with it is that the therapist ends up doing whatever they think they should do, and they usually revert back to whatever other training they've had. So there's a lot of work to be done in thinking about how do we train mental health professionals, therapists, and even how do we create a new workforce? Because actually there aren't enough therapists in the world to start with, let alone the psychedelic assisted therapists. You know, there is a shortage of therapists. There's a waiting list for therapists. So we've got a problem on our hands. So we need to think about new ways of training therapists, creating new workforces, and making this safe and effective and cost effective. So it's a big, big challenge.
And despite psychedelics gaining recognition and slowly moving into the mainstream, there is still some stigma around them clinically. Do you think this could be part of the reason why some therapists might be more hesitant? Is it fear of the unknown? Or actually, have you experienced that when people get on board and start learning, that it's something that they get to grips with and actually enjoy a new way of working?
It's a very interesting question because there are a lot of people that are very curious. So the last two conferences that I've spoken at, I've been very, very surprised that they've been, it's been standing room only. And that's got nothing to do with me as a person. It's to do with what I'm talking about. And this is a clinical audience. These are mental health professionals. So there's lots of people who are very, very interested. I get emails and LinkedIn messages all the time from people saying, how do I get into this? However, there is stigma there. I am going to apologize because what I'm going to say is very, very controversial. But I think it's important. And what's controversial is if you go to conferences and you look at some of the subject matter experts in psychedelics, it's a particular type of person who has had a lot of experience of psychedelics personally themselves. The problem with that, and it's no disrespect to them in whatsoever, but the problem with that is if you have a psychiatrist, an academic, a commissioner from the NHS, and they meet that person, they say, I kind of get you, but you don't really fit into a world health system. So the world of psychedelics is almost stigmatizing itself, I believe, because of the kind of people that are out there talking about it. They don't really fit the boring healthcare professional, boring academic. They are people who are passionate about plant medicine and enjoy plant medicine. And that is potentially a problem. And it could be one of the barriers to adoption in something like the NHS, for instance.
And how do you think the best way to tackle that is? Is it just a question of time and doing more clinical trials and having that robust body of evidence that these treatments do work? Is that the way to move this forward into something that people don't see as a niche, but potentially the future of mental health care?
Yes, obviously, more trials, more understanding, but also more people who are ordinary psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, academics, talking about psychedelics in a way that's easy to understand, that isn't mystical or mysterious or overly spiritual, but is much more academic and theoretically orientated and trusted and known. I think that's one of the way forward, where people will actually say, I understand what you're saying. I can see that there's robust science. I can see that this is safe. And I can see that you're thinking about it in a way that I understand. So it's getting more, it's talking to more people, doing more conferences, more networking, more research, and actually using evidence-based psychological interventions that people understand, rather than a non-directive approach that people don't really understand. And also some of the more controversial sort of pithy questions around, a lot of people saying you have to have taken a psychedelic in order to deliver psychedelic assisted therapy. Now, that's just an opinion that some people have. And again, I respect the opinion, but that is not, that is going to be a huge barrier to adoption in the NHS. Imagine the NHS saying, well, you know, all of these therapists have taken psychedelics and you've got to have taken a psychedelic. It's problematic. And so some of these things have got to shift and change as we move towards hopefully having really highly effective interventions that fit into world health systems.
And then could you tell us a little bit about the therapy training program you're involved with at Clark and Well, and a little more personally, what your approach is to teaching these therapists?
Okay, now again, I'm very sorry, but I am quite controversial
in some of the things that I say.
I told you earlier on that one of my research areas, and it was what I studied in my doctorate, is therapist variables. Now, whether we like it or not, about 25% of therapists are very, very poor. They're not very good at what they do. A very good friend of mine, a colleague, when we meet up, she's got a very senior position in a very well-known university, and she says sometimes she sees the headlines in The Guardian. I always knew that the way that we train psychologists wasn't good enough. And the problem is that the way that we train mental health professionals, psychologists, therapists, is heavily academic. We are assessing these people based on academic essays with the submission of two or three self-selected recordings of therapy sessions which are marked. And I say this isn't good enough. I've taught at a number of universities and have assessed people's work in this way. And if you think about it, if you knew that if you were having surgery tomorrow and you knew that your surgeon had only been assessed because he could write a good essay and nobody had really looked and sat with him when he was doing surgery, you'd be shocked. And there is no other healthcare professional who is assessed in this way. Physios, dentists, nurses. All of their clinical work is observed time and time and time again and assessed, but we're not doing this with therapists. We need to change that. So therefore, the training program that I have written at Clark and Well is all about clinical competency. So practicing and learning, deliberate practice over and over and over again. And then a very robust assessment with an actor, and that person has to demonstrate that they can deliver what they've learnt and not something else. And the pass rate is not necessarily brilliantly high. We don't want everyone to pass because remember, 25% of therapists are not very good at what they do. And so therefore, this is probably one of the most robust, and I might even stick my head out to say it's probably the most robust training program in psychedelic assisted therapy, because it's really important that those therapists can deliver that therapy. These are really poorly people that they're going to be working with. And not only are they poorly, but also we're giving them a drug that makes them incredibly vulnerable. So it's even more important that we've got the best therapists delivering the intervention. And by best, it doesn't mean the most highly qualified or the most experienced. It's about those that have been trained effectively and have got the right traits.
And in terms of actually administering the drug in a trial, for example, something like psilocybin, how different is that, would you say, to administering a drug in a more traditional clinical trial? How much more work needs to go into that? And is that something that's prioritized in the training program?
The therapists are aware of what goes, what the trial is all about and the very necessary legislation, robust scientific principles, health and safety. There's a number of things that go into running a trial in psychedelic assisted therapy. So no least the actual clinic that it's run in, where the drug is stored and security around that, that controlled substance how it is administered, how it is monitored, the fact that everything is recorded, and the fact that there is a nurse and a medical team on site, and all the necessary medical treatment. We know that these drugs are safe from they're very safe, but they're safe because they're administered in these very controlled settings with the right people there to keep that person safe. So it's probably even more complex than just running a phase two or a phase three trial for just a drug by itself.
And to finish, what would you say your hopes are for psychedelic therapy training moving forward? And then more broadly, what do you think the future looks like for psychedelic medicine? If you had to predict maybe 5 or 10 years in the future, what kind of landscape might we be looking at?
Okay, so my hopes for psychedelic assisted therapy training is that we develop an academic pathway for training therapists of the future. So there is a specific qualification and an accreditation process and robust continuing professional development and clinical supervision so that the public can be assured that if that person is accredited and trained, that they're getting somebody that is safe. And that, rather than going to an underground therapist, for instance, so that we actually start to set the standards and we educate the public as to what they should be looking for. That makes it easier for the NHS, for instance, to know who they're looking for and that people are adequately trained and supervised and accredited. And that we have developed a new workforce of clinicians too, who become experts in this area. In terms of the future, I hope that we start to understand what works for whom. And I hope that we begin to understand when is somebody prepared and suitable to take a psychedelic and when are they not. How many therapy sessions might that person need? How many dosing sessions might that person need? And what type of therapy does that person need? And also to have answers to other questions that we haven't even started, looking at. Do you need to have music, be forced to listen to music in a psychedelic assisted therapy? What actually do we mean by the setting? What is important about the environment? There's so many questions that we haven't, that we haven't answered yet. So I hope that in 10 years' time, we know the answers to those questions and we've got a robust scientific approach to helping people who at the moment we're not able to help.
Sarah, thank you so much for chatting with us today.
No problem. It's lovely to talk to you.